You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, welcome everybody. This is another episode. I am not the normal welcome voice that you're used to hearing. Brandon is out on vacation. He is somewhere floating in the Pacific Ocean.
Is that right?
I have no idea.
I don't know where he's
Mexico, perhaps?
Is it Mexico? Okay, he's cruising somewhere. But he is floating off there. So we have, as you just heard, two fantastic voices on that are accompanying this. We have with me, in Brandon's office, Rachel Almeida.
Hello.
Not Alameda. Not the city, but Rachel Almeida. And we also have the one and only Sandy Hughes with us
as well. Hello, hello.
Welcome, Sandy. Woo. Sandy is the one, she actually is very pivotal to this happening every single week. Sandy is the one who normally is not on this side of the microphone. She is posting. She's got the show notes, all that. She makes this thing happen.
I can't take full credit. Yeah. My virtual assistant, Cassini.
Cassini, shout out to Cassini.
For all the show notes every week, even when we're so far behind in getting it to you.
That is true. And so anyway, Sandy does a lot. Cassini does a lot. There's a lot of people that make this thing happen. And we're going to try to figure it out. How to do it without Brandon this week too.
And we are on episode 28. I know that for sure.
Excellent. Yes. That's a lot of episodes.
I know.
We're making progress.
We are making progress.
That's good. We're gonna jump in here, and I have a question for you, Sandy. You opened with a story, a road trip story, and we'll get to that in a second. But I am interested in your go-to road trip food. And let me describe this moment, because we like to road trip. Sometimes they don't go as planned. But we road trip a lot. And so whenever I go to a gas station on a road trip, I have a very particular snack. And it's the only time I ever eat it is on a road trip from a gas station. But mine is a big old bag of Ghirardettos. You know the Ghirardettos snack mix?
What are those?
What are those?
Oh, my goodness. I should have brought some. You guys don't know Ghirardettos? It's like a good Chex Mix. It's got pretzels, the rye chip, it's got the sourdough little thing.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, there's so much sodium in it though. Like, it's absurd.
It's a heart attack waiting to happen.
It's waiting to happen. But I say there's nothing better than like cruising down Highway 5 with some Ghirardettos and usually some sort of, it's probably a Gatorade or something. But yeah, that's my go-to.
Okay.
So Sandy, what is your go-to road trip food?
So I've got a couple, but my favorite, and they're hard to find now. I used to just go to the candy store in Burlingame closed. So I haven't been able to find these since, but I call them burnt peanuts.
Burnt peanuts.
And there are these peanuts that have like this red coating. And
I have not seen. Not corn chips.
Not corn chips. Nuts. Corn no, nuts. Not corn nuts. These are like peanuts with this red coating.
I've never heard of those.
And they're really good. But I can't eat them all the time because I'm like allergic to red food dye. But they're like my favorite when I'm on a road trip.
Nice. That. Okay.
And Bugles.
Bugles.
Oh, Bugles. Yes.
Little finger hats.
Yes.
Little finger hats.
Exactly.
You gotta put them on the
exactly.
Yeah. That's excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Burnt peanuts and Bugles.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of a salty thing going on.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. There's a theme there.
Yeah.
There's a theme there. Miss Almeida.
Big sodium people.
Big it's true.
I think I would say hot Cheetos and
hot
gummy bears.
And gummy bears.
Yeah. Gummy bears.
Black Forest gummy bears from Costco.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Okay, okay. Gummy bears, if I'm honest, they frustrate me.
Yeah.
They frustrate me. I feel like they should always be softer than they are.
Mm.
And then I feel like I'm so irritated chewing them that I don't get to enjoy the flavor. I just want the experience to be over.
Oh.
But I'll grab more every time. Like, I don't get it. But
yeah.
Interesting.
Well, shout out to Brandon. But high school camp,
yeah.
He would like suck on these gummy bears and throw them at the other van. That's the only usefulness to their texture.
Yeah.
They're a little hard, but they stick.
There you go.
But they stick.
They do. A little gross, but fun.
Yeah.
They do.
Adley loves fruit snacks. Adley's my 6-year-old. And she will. It's wild. She'll, and I'll just map this onto gummy bears. But she'll take fruit snacks and she puts them in her mouth, and she will suck on them for like 2 hours.
And wow.
She just walks around with this big old wad of gummy bears in her, you know, fruit snacks in her mouth, and it's, I can feel her teeth rotting as she does it.
Oh my gosh.
Just like sit there. So we have to limit her fruit snack
her
access
fruit snack.
Because of that. But
well, I'm a big gummy bear fan, and Rachel knows this.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, in fact, she's brought me on several occasions, and especially when I was out with the COVID cooties.
Yeah.
My gummy bear bag is gone, by the way. Eaten full.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm more of a chocolate candy guy than a fruit kind of gummy candy guy. But that's wild. Okay. And hot Cheetos.
Always. Always hot Cheetos.
Okay, I can't get into the hot Cheeto thing. I can do the crunchy Cheetos. I can do the puffs.
Yeah.
I have not gotten into this hot Cheeto thing.
Mm.
I have not had a Cheeto for probably a decade.
Wow.
Yeah,
it hurts
probably
a little bit.
It's been a long time since I've had Cheetos.
Oh.
I don't exactly know why. I'm not against Cheetos. I just don't. I don't think they're just not in the rhythm.
And
you know, we were just
Ghirardetto's.
Just not Ghirardetto. Well, that's good. That's a fun get to know you piece there. But Sandy, part of the reason we asked that question is that you opened your sermon this Sunday with this terrifying story of driving to Hume Lake with a bus full of students. And I just know as an old youth pastor myself, I told you this already, like I could feel that story. I could feel that tension of like your response, like when you talk about the headline running through your head.
Yes.
I'm like, I've seen those headlines run through my head before too. Never, I don't know if it was quite as precarious as the situation you were in, but I've been stuck in snow and it is terrifying. Tell us a little bit, like maybe just for those who didn't get a chance to listen, like quick recap of the story and just kind of what you were experiencing in that moment.
So we were on our way to Hume Lake in 2007, and most of my trips to Hume Lake have been very uneventful. In fact, no snow at all. Most of the 20-some years of trips to Hume through the years.
Yeah.
And the weather forecast was supposed to be clear the whole weekend, you know. It was going to be one of those weekends. It was shorts weather. So this is, my father taught me this. Always fill up the tank.
Yeah.
That last gas station before there's nothing, because you never know what's going to happen.
Shout out to Papa Hughes.
That's a good
lesson. Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And we're literally pulling out of the gas station. The snow starts to fall.
Ugh.
And that's at like 2,000 feet. So that's pretty low elevation for snow in that area.
Yeah.
And we start, you know, just kind of going up the hill, and it's coming down. So we turned out, chained up all the vans, and started heading our way up the Hume Lake Hill. And an ambulance is coming down the hill with a passenger, a kid from Hume, who was going down the inner tube run and broke his femur.
Oh, gosh.
And they skidded out.
The femur's
out
of, the big one, right?
Like,
that's intense.
That's like, this is, not only is this kid in massive pain, now the ambulance skidded out of control, crossed our lane of traffic, and landed in a ditch.
Oh.
So the road is closed. Thankfully, everyone in the, I don't think I said this in the sermon, but everyone in the ambulance was okay except for the kid with a broken femur.
Yeah, he's been a little less okay in the ditch.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it took about 2 hours for them to get that thing out of the ditch.
Oh.
So Hugh Lake's wondering where all their campers are, because we're all stuck on the road.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And we're one of the first caravans, and the snow is just coming down. And it gets to the point where I can hardly see a couple feet in front of me, and I'm wondering if we should turn around and go back. And so we pull over, and I get the guys out, and you know, this is their first time driving in the snow, most of them, and it's just like, oh no.
Yeah.
And we have this conversation: should we turn around and go back down the hill?
Jeez.
And I think I gave a shout out to Will Mitchell, who was one of our longtime high school leaders for years. He's all, "Hey, Sandy, you know, God's got his hand on us. We're supposed to be here. It's going to be more dangerous going down the hill than going up the hill. I think God's on us." And it was like Jesus saying, "Sandy, where's your faith? I got you."
That's so good.
You know, but my fear was, if moms ever really saw the road we take their kids on, in the pouring snow, I'm convinced they would never let their children go to Hume. Moms, don't worry. You want your kids to go to Hume if they get the chance. But it was. It was that headline that I mentioned in the sermon of, you know, stupid youth pastor leads the way as all three vans go skid off into the ravine of Hume Lake, all 51 passengers dead. And
it's so good. I just think of, like, you know, it's such a great intro to the text you're preaching through of Jesus, you know, with the disciples on the Sea of Galilee. And there's you can almost sense that same sort of panic, right, in them as they're watching these waves kind of crash around them. And they you can sense their kind of fear in the story, you know.
Yeah.
Mark very vividly describes the scene. And I just think again of, like, how in those moments, right, we're caught in this kind of what do we do, right? And you know, Will Mitchell having that sort of wisdom to say, like, God's here, God's present with us. Let's lean in. It's going to be kind of okay there.
Yeah.
You mentioned a quote by one of my favorites, which brownie points for
brownie points.
Quoting N.T. Wright. fantastic. But I'd love to. I don't know if you have that quote in front of you again, but just kind of reading that again to talk about what the sea symbolized in the first century, because it's a very different context. We have a modern view of the Brandon's on a cruise.
Right.
Willfully choosing to go float in the ocean. Right. Yeah, that is not necessarily what the disciples or those in the first century would do. So I don't know if you have that interior quote. I'd love to share that again.
Well, thanks to Rachel, she has it, like, on our little show note thing here going on.
Oh,
but
God. Yeah, there it is. Look at that.
I know. So
Rachel Almeida.
I know. Let's I was go. Like, there we go.
Hot Cheetos for you. Fantastic. There it is.
But he goes, apart from fishermen, the Jews were not seafaring people. The sea came to symbolize for them the dark power of evil, threatening to destroy God's good creation, God's people, and God's purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, so imagine, right? Like, they, and again, the scene that you kind of connected is, earlier in chapter 4, Jesus is preaching these stories of the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And now as he jumps in the sea, which you alluded to, he's crossing over into Gentile territory. And the kingdom of God is expanding now beyond you know, the Jewish territory of the Galilee and over into the Gentile territory.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the midst of that, they're caught in this storm, which again symbolizes this sort of dark power of evil. It's threatening. I love that phrasing. It's threatening God's good creation, God's people, and God's purposes. And you connect a little bit of that idea of that. Some of the fear going on there is them saying, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. Like,
right.
It's not like the kingdom of God is supposed to continue on there. And yeah, what we see is, you know, I think that the image of Jesus sleeping on the cushion in the midst of that. And I'd love for you to just share, you know, as you did, like, that you talk about how it kind of builds up two responses, both confidence and fear. Like, share a little bit more about those responses that you see in there.
Well, I think that I said this on Sunday, and you know, I think the disciples' fear is a normal response to what they were experiencing. But I love that, you know, Jesus is just sitting there sleeping on a cushion. You know, and there's this piece of just, I'm sure he knows what's going on, even in his sleep. He's tired. He's out for the count, really.
Yeah.
But there's this confidence. He knows who's in control of the wind and the waves.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether he was conscious enough to know what was going on, I kind of sense he probably was, you know, but I don't want to give the disciples too much of a bad rap, because even their fishermen, this was different for them. And their fear shows, and it comes out. But I love, and I don't think I mentioned this in the sermon, but I love the fact that they knew who to go to.
Yeah.
They ran straight to Jesus.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when Jesus asks those two questions, why are you afraid? Where is your faith?
Yeah.
You know, I think we can get down on the disciples a little bit, but the reality is they knew who to run to in the middle of this squall.
You know. There's that inkling of faith, you know, which again, I love the way you tied that into an earlier parable where Jesus is like, Kingdom of God's like a little mustard seed. Yeah. It's just this little tiny thing.
Yeah.
And you sense that in the disciples, this little tiny bit of faith where they knew kind of where to run.
Yeah.
Which I think gets back to, again, this idea of the definition of faith. Like, what is faith? You know, I've heard it said that faith is the readiness to act as if something's true.
Mm.
Right? Which I think that's always been a good definition for me. The readiness... Yeah. To act as if something's true. So the kind of classic example I always give is like, even right now, all three of us are sitting in chairs. Mm-hmm. We believe that chairs will hold us up. And so we are then ready to act on that truth by sitting in them. You know, if we refuse to sit in the chairs we're sitting in, you could argue we do not have faith. We are not ready to act as if that is true.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to say Jesus is Lord. It's another thing to act as if that is true. Be ready to act as if that's true. And I think you see that, you know, as you're saying in the disciples, is they believed Jesus was Lord of creation, of all things. And in that moment, although they're terrified, they are ready to act as if that's true by running to Jesus.
Yeah.
Which I think is really powerful.
Well, and I think, too, you know, the whole point of, you know, the kingdom of God going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still, and I know you're going to preach on this next week, and I mentioned this in our worship meeting, I still wonder when those demons come to see Jesus, I still kind of wonder if they thought he was going under in that storm.
Yeah,
you know?
That's interesting. Yeah.
There's a piece of this that, you know, Jesus has just finished teaching on the kingdom, what the kingdom of God, what the kingdom of heaven is like, and yet, here it is.
Yeah.
It is the kingdom of God going under.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Which is always the case.
Right? Yeah.
Like, I think of, that's going to be the response when Jesus is hanging on the cross.
Yeah.
Because everyone does, like, man, maybe he wasn't who he said he was.
Wasn't who he said he was.
You know,
that's right.
they doubt, they question. Yeah. They're like, gosh, we thought it was something else. And it gets back to a little bit of that conversation we've had around the counter logic of the kingdom.
Yeah.
When it feels like it's failing. Is actually, in many ways, the kingdom of God actually thriving.
Yeah.
And it resets, recalibrates what we understand about the kingdom of God. And I think you see that even here with the disciples. You know, they're going, they almost have this assumption that if we're just with Jesus, everything will just be up and to the right. Everything will be good.
Yeah.
Everything will work out. But you brought out this point, which I thought was so, so powerful, is that following Jesus does not mean that the storms will never come. That we are, it isn't God removing us from circumstances. And I think, you know, all of us, you listening as well, you've probably lived long enough to recognize, man, why do these storms keep coming, even though we're following Jesus? And I don't know if either of you guys have thoughts on, like, just what is it, how have you guys navigated, like, we follow Jesus, we think it's all going to be good, but yet storms still come. Like, I don't know if you guys have thought of that or experienced that, but I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on those. Again, the storms will come even when we follow Jesus, and how you guys kind of approach those.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think about just the different storms I faced in my life, and there are times where, you know, like the disciples, I'm super fearful, but I also know who to run to.
Yeah.
And there are times where I'm angry in the midst of the storm. Really?
Yeah.
Why now? What? Come on, Lord, really?
Yeah.
And then there are times where it's like, holy cow, the storm is raging all around. And it's like, I know who's in control of this situation, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Except kind of walk, trusting the Lord that he's going to walk through with me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I feel like, you know, a lot of that, I think, to me personally, is in the state of my soul and how I'm caring for my soul.
Yeah.
In my responses.
Yeah.
And then there are times where it just, you're just angry about it. And that's okay too. God's big enough to handle those things.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing is we know who to run to in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we may not understand why, but eventually you see God at work doing something in your own life, in your own soul.
Yeah.
And he has this for a reason. I think of You know, my mom died when I was like 26, 27 mm. years old. And for some of you who know that story, you know, I was the one, you know, giving her resuscitation and all that kind of stuff. And it was pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, she battled cancer for a very short time, but, you know, the Lord took her like in the blink of an eye. And I'm like, Lord, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know? My mom and I were super close, all that kind of stuff. But the Lord has used that. When I came to CPC, I had no clue how God would use that part of my life and that storm in my life with kids whose parents died of cancer at such young ages, at like, you know, middle school ages. And just being able to walk in that storm with a kid, with a student, a young student, you know, it's that look back of, wow, I don't know exactly what this student's going through, but I kind of have an inkling, you know, so some of those things we just don't know when we're walking through how God's going to use it later.
I think of, I was just looking back at the text and seeing, you know, when the storm's piling on the disciples, you know, their question is, like, Jesus' humanity is shown when he's sleeping, but the disciples' humanity is shown when they're like, don't you care if we drown? You know, and I sense that as you're kind of sharing that story of, like, there's a huge place to just say, God, don't you care? You know, like, I've been, one of the things I've been weaving into my just kind of regular times with the Lord is the Psalms, and I've been reading, I think it's a cycle of about 60 days. I read through all the Psalms and just kind of keep doing that. And it's just the thing that's just struck me is, and it's not new if you've read the Psalms, but it's just the overwhelming freedom that the psalmists have to express themselves to God. Of, God, where are you? Where the heck are you? Or seize my enemies are crouching in on me. Like, take them. Like, get rid of them. You know, like. And there's that sense of, which I love in your story, like there's some freedom to bring the full of like the human experience before God and lay that out. And he's with us in the boat. You know, and sometimes he'll rebuke. Sometimes, you know, we do overstep. And I think of Job. Where he's like, where were you? And I created the world. Where were you when I did this? Like, and there's a space for that. But there's a space for a gentleness in which Jesus comes alongside and embraces us as father and as a child of God. But there's an element of, again, in that faith of saying, I can bring the fullness of who I am and trust Jesus' response back to me in that. That he'll give me either the rebuke I need, the comfort I need, or just the presence, you know, through whatever that storm is. And that grows over time, you know, through, I think, when I talk to people mature in their faith, I sense that kind of, not a flippant avoidance of things, but a calmness of under. It's the Will Mitchell saying, Sandy, God's with us.
Exactly.
He'll take us down or up the mountain. He'll be with us.
That's so good, because it's like a willingness to let God be God in the storm. Because I think back to what you said on Sunday, if like in the storms, it brings up the fear of the unknown. And I think most of the storms that I've walked through are either the unknown or where I feel completely out of control or unprepared. And even how you talked about, you've driven that road so many times, but you couldn't have prepared necessarily for that storm. And in some ways, in those storms, I have to learn again and again, like, how to let God be God in the storm and not just have an expectation of what he's going to do to either, like, stop the storm or make it go away, but to trust that he's going to use that to refine or make me more dependent on him than ever before. Because on my own, I can't, I can't get out of the storm.
There's a refining piece where you know, I'm not one to believe that God sends every storm, but rather, as you said, God uses every storm. That in you know, the fallout of sin in our world is so dramatic that we live in a world where bad things happen.
Exactly. Where evil is abounds.
And we're going to bump into that. And then the beautiful thing with the gospel is God says, I can use that brokenness for something good. And Rich, I love what you were just saying around how it makes you more dependent on Jesus. And there's a sense like in that storm, the things that, you know, imagine the disciples had the things that they were ready to lean on to for security. Those yeah. weren't there on the boat anymore, right? Right? Like, and there was a sense in which those right. broke away. They destroyed our stability and kind of the normal things we go to for security. And yeah. they were forced to go to Jesus. It sounded like they knew again where to go.
Where to
but
go.
They also didn't have another option.
Right.
You know, and so it's like that's where they ran. And I think there's a piece of that where in these storms, these moments where they break down our other trust structures and we have to run to Jesus. And he teaches us, I think, a little bit in that, in those moments. Yeah. But it's good. So, Sandy, you know, one of the other points you make in this is how in the midst of the storm, you know, your big idea, which I thought was so good, is that Jesus will help us build faith that can endure the storms. And that really is the call, is not, again, to skirt the storm, not to get around it, but rather we are, you know, Jesus is calling us to have faith in the midst of that storm. And, you know, you asked those questions we were just talking about. Jesus, where are you? Jesus, don't you care? And I'd be interested in how have you experienced that building of faith? I think it comes a little bit on the conversation we're just having around reliance on him. But I love the perspective of, you know, that story you shared was a while ago. And the story about your mom even further.
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of cumulative effect of when we continually lean into Jesus.
Yeah.
Where that faith kind of builds. And I'd be interested in both your perspectives on again, like, almost like repetition through storms. I think how never necessarily makes it easier, but it helps us learn how to lean into Jesus and build that faith.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's probably not a very good question. What are your thoughts on that?
I didn't go too much into this on this point. I kind of alluded to it in communion when we took communion. But, you know, I think I've, in my life, in the middle of the storms, I really don't believe we're meant to go through those by ourselves. We can.
Yeah.
We can. We can choose to.
Yeah.
But I think there's a piece of community that is so important. And I wish I'd brought that out a little bit more in this sermon.
Yeah.
I love the fact when you watch the disciples, they go. It says the disciples go to find Jesus.
Yeah.
They're going as a group.
Yeah.
And I think there's this piece when we're in the rage of storms that we do this in community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because if you're getting batted left and right, storm after storm, and we all know people whose lives have been like that.
Yeah.
It's just one storm after another, and you just kind of go, Lord, come on, give this person a break.
Yeah.
But there's a sense of community that you know you're not alone in it.
Yeah.
You know that Jesus is with you. But there's also this piece of if you've got some community around you, that they're in it with you, you know. Mm-hmm. Rach, your mom came up to me. I didn't know what to say on Sunday when I saw her in the courtyard. But, you know, I was thanking her for the meal she sent and, you know, the goodie baskets. And she'll say to your family. You know, you know, but there's this piece. Yeah, I'm just sick with COVID. Not, you know, who hasn't been sick with COVID? But it was like
me. Actually, I still have.
I'm one of the few.
I'm still dodging. Knock on wood. I just took a plane ride. So,
but it was like I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, and there were several people who reached out to me. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's this piece of community that I think is just so important.
Yeah.
That you know you have people there who support you. You know you have people who are praying for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, who will go through the mess with you.
Yeah.
That aren't afraid to step into the messiness of the storm.
Yeah. Yeah, we can quickly, because we're good modern individualists.
Yes.
We quickly... want to make this whole faith thing about me and God.
Yeah.
And there is that. Like, that is a huge component, no doubt. But I think we way over emphasize that.
Yeah.
And what Jesus is doing in the kingdom of God is he's creating this new community, this new humanity.
Yeah.
And I love the way you're drawing that out. Like, when, you know, Rachel, when your mom says, hey, Sandy, your family.
Yeah.
that's legit. Like, that's actually what we are. Like, we are, in fact, this sort of new family. That means we carry burdens. That means we meet needs. That we, you know, find ways to care for one another that are just different. And that's the example. Like, communion is a great Sunday for that. It's, we gather around that table. And think of your kitchen table where your family gathers. And that's the thing we rally around. We are, in fact, family. Built on this ethic of Jesus, you know, self-sacrificial love for us, and that becomes the way then that this new family, this new humanity, is constituted, and that's how we. I think it's a huge point on how our faith grows in the midst of those storms. We're never meant to carry them alone, nor do we have to. And there is a sense in which we need the voices of others. I think about actually a lot on Sundays when I sit up front. And the many times I'll stop singing and I'll just listen to the voices sing. And it's there are times, not all the time, but there are plenty of times where I need to hear the voices of the community of God just singing those praises. Because maybe I can't bring them myself. But it's almost as if that body's singing on our behalf. We need the Will Mitchells. We need those voices, you know, that bring that. That's beautiful. What do you guys think that, you know, I was thinking kind of in that response where they, the disciples say, they go and wake Jesus up. Like, what do you guys think our, you know, they didn't necessarily have to respond that way. There's a sense in which that faith was there and Jesus was building that. What do you think our responses, kind of our gut responses in the midst of the storms, whatever it is, what do they reveal about us? And what do they kind of, what can we learn from those? Like, I think becoming self-aware of our responses is maybe a tool that we can kind of understand about where we're at with Jesus. So I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on identifying our responses?
I think in some ways it reveals where we go. Or really, like, that question that you asked, Sandy, of what do you find to be most trustworthy? Because I even think back to this last weekend, definitely not a Hume Lake road, but we had a mishap with our bus and we had to pull the bus over and we didn't know if we'd be able to get kids safely home. Parents know, don't worry.
I had a child on that trip. It was great. She had a fun time.
But each of our responses of, like, either the safety perspective or really whatever we moved to, and then just realizing that the only thing we really could do in that moment was just pray. Even before all of the planning. But I think in some ways, like, that's strategizing and you need to do some of that. But even, like, where we first turn, or just, like, those moments where we, like, freeze up and panic. There is that underlying fear, I think. I think it just reveals panic in some ways.
It exposes, right? Like, where we lean into for trust. If you always run to this or that, like, that's in some ways communicating what we have faith in. Right? And so in that, I think when we take stock of those things, they allow us to kind of evaluate do we have that mustard seed. Again, it's not, you don't have to have it all figured out. The disciples, I mean, they're chaotic on the boat. They don't know what they're doing. You know, and that's a recurrent theme that should give us hope. But they did know, like, who to go to.
They did know who to go to.
And there's something too, you know, I was thinking, like, that in that moment, it strikes me that it was their natural reaction. Like, it wasn't something they went circled up, hey, who should we go to? Who should we turn to? Oh, yeah, let's go to Jesus.
Right.
But, like, it was there in the moment of crisis, it revealed their kind of, almost their, what's been habituated in them. Like, they had, over time now, walking with Jesus, realized, he's who we go to. And so it strikes me that I think there's a level of which in the storm, God's going to graciously meet us there. But sometimes we prepare for the storms, not actually in the storm, right?
That's right.
A sense of the regular, mundane practices of going to Jesus become in us when the storm hits, our natural tendency will come out. You know, maybe the stupid sports example I think of is, like, again, it's the one I use all the time, but, like, when Steph Curry is making some ridiculous shot where he's getting knocked over and all that, it's not because he figured out how to do it right then. It's he's skilled enough and habituated enough into him the ability to, when adversity hits, he can make the adjustments he needs to make the shot.
Yeah.
It's a little bit sloppy but of a metaphor, but it's in the same way. It's like we learn to lean into Jesus, not in the storm, but in our Mondays through Sundays.
The everyday,
ordinary,
mundane things.
Yeah. And it becomes then the thing that flows out of us. Mm-hmm. Like I think we see that in the disciples.
Yeah.
That's so good because I think also like God reveals his trustworthiness so that when we're in the storms too, like we've seen his faithfulness. So kind of back to that history of like even worshiping together on a Sunday, we can celebrate God's faithfulness from the past or even in the Psalms. It's the Israelites remembering God bringing them through.
Yeah.
And even with, again, back to middle school camp, people have been able to see the trustworthiness of God. Or we just finished reading through Nehemiah, where Nehemiah's response was to pray. So when one of the students stood up on the bus and was like, what do we do when we face opposition? And you hear 33 students shout out, pray!
That's awesome.
That's so good.
Because they've seen God's faithfulness in Nehemiah. They just talked about it. And that's their response.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so good.
Way to go, middle schoolers.
Yeah.
I love them.
That's so good. I'd love to talk, you know, there's this interesting line at the end of the text. Where after Jesus calms the storm, you sense the disciples circling up and they're like,
whoa.
Holy smokes. Yeah. And the text actually says they were terrified.
They were terrified.
Which is interesting. I think it's Matthew's account, I could be wrong, where he talks about how they're scared in the storm, but then they're terrified after the storm. And I think there's an intentional note of like an increasing fear. But it's different. And so, you know, I'd love to say, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but like, why do you think the disciples were terrified after Jesus calms the storm?
You know, Rachel had made this comment in my sermon before I gave it, like the wordplay there. And so I didn't get to do a whole bunch of study on this, but there is a difference that this terrified word really meant like awe, like in awe.
Mm.
And it gets translated terrified, which
rightly
so, you can be in awe and terrified at the same time.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely this sense that, oh, I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
And it comes back to some of the things I alluded to about what the disciples would have thought about the sea.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Jonah.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Psalm 107. Psalm 107, that I should have just had Brenner read that instead of the passage because I think their minds went to that. They knew who could calm the storm.
There's a stupid example I'm thinking of right now, but like you know, we have this, gosh, how old is, you know, 6 month old dog.
Winston.
Little Winston. Yeah, I know, and he's huge. He's way too big. But it's so he, you know, the girls love him. I like him. I don't know if I love him yet.
That's what
I tell the girls. It upsets them. But I like him. I like him. You know, he's gotta earn a little love. He's not my daughter, so he's not my son. But anyway, like, so he's full puppy, right? So he's nipping and jumping on you all the time. We're trying to, you know, kind of train that out of him and all that. But it's so funny when I watch like Madison or Adley try to reprimand him. Yeah, they like with all their gooses, they're like, Winston, no, and they're like trying to muster up the power of like the boy, and
the voice.
he just keeps going
right.
But when dad stands up and I go dad voice, I'm like, Winston, stop. He cowers, right? And he usually runs under whatever chairs.
Right.
Kind of hides. And he realized, uh-oh, I upset the big
boy. I'm in trouble now.
And although it's not necessarily fear in the way that Winston has, like, an active, like, I don't want what's going to happen, that image comes to mind of, like, the disciples kind of bracing.
Yes,
they realize
bracing.
There's an awe in something now that is more powerful. Mm. And it's like, what do you do with that? And I think it is their recognition of, this guy is Lord not only over us, but over all of creation.
Yeah.
And there is a reverent kind of terror in the way you described it, to realize we're in the presence of something great.
Yeah.
We're in the presence of something powerful.
Yeah.
And that deserves a sort of response too. Again, not out of a again, that's where maybe the metaphor sloppy with Winston. It's not out of a what are you gonna do?
Not
you
know? Out of fear of the response.
Yes.
But
out of a sort of acknowledgement of the authority and the power that's
right.
there. Yeah, and that will be. Yeah, I think we'll see that again this coming week.
Yeah,
when he has that over the.
Well, and it is interesting that the next few passages that we see, you know, I think the disciples are going to be going back to those teachings that Jesus did on what is the kingdom of heaven like.
Yeah,
and we're going to see more of Jesus' power and authority doing things that it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, it's Jesus taught it, now he's put it into practice.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and you'll see the different expressions. You know, we were talking right before this, in two Sundays, we'll see Jesus' power over disease and sickness and even death itself. And he actually expresses this incredibly, you know, poignant, powerful moment, but he does it through a tenderness.
Yes.
And a way of looking at particularly a woman with an illness that's like, how's her daughter? And it's this sort of deep power, but in this other kind of almost left-handed way.
Yes.
Where it's like, it's not this power over, but it's this power under.
Yeah.
And so Jesus has this, you know, a healthy, obviously, view and use of his authority. And you see that often play out in that way.
Yeah.
See, I love, you know, on that idea again of Jesus as Lord of the storm. You know, I imagine as you were preaching and as I thought through, so many in our congregation are going through storms. They're going through these moments of kind of chaos, and we recognize that. Like you preach a sermon like this, and I know there's a weight to that you identify, of like, this isn't just a random text we're in. People are experiencing that. The waves are crashing in on the boat, and it seems to be overwhelming. You know, what would you say to someone who's facing a storm? Much of it is what you preached on, but what is the encouragement that you would give to those who may be listening, feeling the weight of a storm?
You know, teaching a passage like this, and you know certain people in the body who, you know, just got a horrible health diagnosis, and they're sitting right there, and you're talking about Jesus being the Lord over this storm, and they're living in the unknown of what their life is going to be, and I mean, I was very aware of that as I sat there and you know, preached this sermon. And it's easy to get up there and preach something like this when, you know, my life's not too stormy right now for a change, you know? And I think that, and I don't want to be trite in that answer either.
Yeah.
You know, I could give you the good old Sunday school answer, Jesus.
Yeah.
But the reality, that is the truth.
Yeah.
And even in the midst of the unknown, you know, whether it's that health diagnosis you just got, or, you know, you're struggling over your child who has, you know, walked away from the faith, or whatever your personal storm is, you know, if there's anything I've learned about Jesus being Lord over the storm, he loves us. He's in it with us.
Yeah.
He's big enough to handle your grief, your anger, whatever emotions you're feeling. And if there's anything I've learned in my life, I can trust him. I can trust him. May not be what I want. But I want to make sure I'm doing what he wants, and I want to be open to what he wants. And that's the hard work right there in the heart. Being
that's so good.
Being able to go,
okay,
Lord, I don't know what you're doing here, and I don't even know if I'm going to be here 6 months from now. Or whatever, you know. But there's a piece of this that we have to remember, that Jesus is there with us. And
so good.
He's big enough. He's big enough to handle all those emotions we throw at him. And he loves us in the midst of it. And that's where this, you know, you see, you talked about the tenderness of Jesus in this next story that we're going to be seeing in a couple weeks. But I mean, this whole idea of God's grace in the middle of it. You know, I think we could easily read this passage and Jesus having a condemnation in the questions, you know, and I would say when I was younger in my faith, I looked at those questions as a condemnation.
Interesting.
Instead of, hey, where are you?
I'm with you.
I'm with you. I'm here.
It's so good. Yeah, and that's take that as an encouragement, I know, for me and for you all listening out there. Jesus, he's with you. He's on the boat. He's on the cushion. He's asleep. He's in control. He's present. All those things. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful reminder.
And there's people who want to be here with you in the sky.
Yeah.
And
they may need to remind you that Jesus is with you. You may not see it. The waves are blinding you. Yeah. But he's with you. And lean into that.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're listening and you are going through that, we would love to pray for you and partner with you. I can't remember how you email. Just email us or something. But
communications at cpc.org. I need to send you guys a cheat sheet.
I know. We always forget these things. So simple, but genuinely, send us if there's things we can be praying for.
Yes.
Sometimes you just need a voice reminding you Jesus is with you. We can do that. So. Well, Sandy, thank you so much. Great, fantastic job. It was a joy. I was listening from Minneapolis all the way across the country. I was tuning in. Beautiful reminder of the presence of Jesus in the midst of the storm.
Thanks.
So thank you for that. And thank you, Rachel, for joining us as well.
Yeah.
And anyway, we'll catch you next time. Brandon, I think we'll be back.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
To that. We'll see you guys next
week. I'll go back to the backside of this podcast.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. So anyway, appreciate y'all. Thanks for listening along.
Aww.